This is Donald S. Reinhardt. I am reading from my newly written book called The Encyclopedia of the Pivot System for All Brass Instruments. This is tape number 6. I will continue on the tongue discussion. Tongue type 6. The tongue type 6 is also used by many performers. Barring minor deviations, it is identical to the tongue type 5. The tongue strikes the back of the upper teeth, the upper gums, or higher, depending upon the register being played, and immediately lunges downward so that the tip of the tongue makes contact in the gully where the lower gums adjoin the floor of the mouth. While an ascending slurred interval is being executed, the tongue arch level is raised by pulling the tip of the tongue toward the back part of the mouth without permitting the tip to lose contact with the floor of the mouth. While ascending, the tongue arch level is lowered by the tip of the tongue pushing toward the gully without breaking contact with the floor of the mouth. The tongue type 6 does not offer the jaw support of the tongue type 5. However, it is used by many performers who possess shorter tongues. Tongue type 7. The tongue type 7 is indeed a very rare form. Sometimes it is used by players who perform with the jaw in a very protruded position. This tongue strikes the back of the lower teeth, the lower gums, and even further down, depending upon the register being played. A split second after the tongue strikes, the tip lunges downward so that it makes contact in the gully where the lower gums adjoin the floor of the mouth. During an ascending slurred interval, the tongue presses forward to create the essential tongue arch level and to support the jaw while protruding. While descending, the forward tongue pressure is gradually reduced and the position of the jaw recedes slightly. Other than the tongue strike, the tongue type 7 is identical to the tongue type 5. Tongue type 8. The tongue type 8 is another rare form. It is a combination of tongue types 6 and 7. The tongue strikes the back of the lower teeth, the lower gums, and even where the lower gums join the floor of the mouth. And during an ascending slur, the tongue arch level is raised by pulling the tip of the tongue toward the back part of the mouth without permitting the tongue to lose contact with the floor of the mouth. While descending, the tongue arch level is lowered by the tip of the tongue pushing forward toward the gully without breaking contact with the floor of the mouth. The 8 tongue procedures just presented comprise the general basic tongue types for sustaining and slurring. Although minute personal physical deviations do enter to a certain extent, they must never be permitted to alter the basic tongue types. Successful brass playing is possible on any of the tongue types, providing that the tongue type adopted suits the general physical qualifications of the player. Question number 10. What are the three tongue categories and how may they be developed and maintained? The three tongue categories are speed, smoothness, and volume. They may be developed and maintained as follows. Category of speed, that is rapid single, double, and triple tonguing. This tongue of speed articulates a very short D or DEH tongue stroke high into the mouth. Only the fore part of the tongue is used for this miniature stroke. Therefore, the length of the tongue backstroke is reduced proportionately. Remember, the shorter the stroke, the greater the speed. In order to develop and maintain this rapid tongue stroke in the proper manner, the correct syllables must be enunciated consistently. For a rapid single tongue, use the pointed D or DEH. Never the syllables two, that is T-O-O-O or T-U. The rapid single tongue demands the use of the pointed D-G or D-E-H, G-E-H. Never the syllables two-ku, that is T-O-O-O, K-O-O-O, or T-U, K-U. The syllables for rapid triple tongue should be the pointed D-D-G or D-E-H, D-E-H, G-E-H. Never tu-tu-ku. The pointed G or G-E-H syllable used in the double and triple tongue patterns is generally a throat syllable and not articulated in the usual manner. At the outset, learn to sing the syllables on different pitches without the mouthpiece or the instrument. When this has been mastered, play them on the instrument. The first attempts should be executed in a very languid, legato enunciation so that the short, relaxed tongue stroke is the initial objective. In this case, relaxation and speed must come first, definition later. Clarity of articulation is acquired and maintained by simply altering the contour of the tongue so that it becomes pointed without being stiff. Do not misconstrue the statement that speed must come before accuracy is attained. This is not intended to encourage sloppy, amateurish articulation, but rather to insist that the performer must experience the sensation of speed before he can expect to master it. All players must learn to articulate cleanly with the limited amount of tongue stroke suggested. However, they should experience speed first. For any given pitch, the rapid tongue forms must strike the same spot in the mouth. For example, if the tongue strikes the upper gums for a given pitch during the single tonguing, then it must strike the same spot for double and triple tonguing. This makes it possible to control all forms of rapid tonguing. Most methods create the impression that rapid double and triple tonguing are only intended for staccato articulation. All performers must take advantage of both the legato and staccato forms for their double and triple tonguing. This is a must in modern brass playing. To summarize, I'm trying to say that you're triple tongue articulation should be or with the tongue striking high in the mouth, and the syllables were certainly not tutika tutika tu tutika tutika tu, because the tutuku, the stroke is too long. That's triple. Now double, I said you should use a DG or DEHGEH. Or but never tuka tuka tu tuka tuka tu. Again, with the tuku, as prescribed in most books, the tongue stroke is too long for any great speed. Category of smoothness. That is, legato tongue. Since the word legato means to connect, the tongue stroke in this category of smoothness must not be permitted to sever or break the air column, but merely to articulate into it very lightly. This result of smoothness is created by enunciating a soft da, do, or d on the initial note, and then continuing it without interruption on the subsequent notes of the same breath with a la, lu, or li enunciation. This is an extremely light but broad flat tongue stroke, which gently brushes the back of the upper teeth, the upper gums, or higher, depending upon the register being played. Remember, the vowel a is to be used in the lower register, u in the middle register, and e in the upper register. There are times when this delicate stroke is so minimized that the tongue feels as though it were hovering in space and barely moving to articulate. The playing dynamics must be adjusted in order to cater to maximum smoothness. Category of volume. That is loud, slow, detached notes. Volume utilizes the two attack, which is presented in practically all breath instruction books. It is a long backstroke of the tongue, which lends itself particularly well to all slow, loud, detached attacks in the middle register. With slight modifications, if the tempo is sufficiently slow, it may be used to execute piccato, staccato, medium, accented, tenuto or sostenuto, and sustained attacks. However, if this long stroke too is used for speed, as most books suggest, or for the upper and lower registers, without consideration of tongue level, the performer will certainly fail in his endeavor. Remember, it is the backstroke of the tongue that is a controlling factor for both volume and speed. The three tongue categories must not be confused. Question number 11. How do the three tongue categories benefit the performer? If the three tongue categories are thoroughly understood and correctly applied to the playing, they will alleviate any doubt as to the correctness of the approach and prevent any physical impediments from precluding success. When the performer examines a new exercise, he should immediately classify the various musical passages into the correct tongue category and then practice accordingly. In this way, he is not working up blind alleys, technically speaking. Question number 12. Should the level of the tongue arch be altered while slurring? Positively, yes. Altering the level of the tongue arch to its correct positions, that is, ah for the lower register, oo for the middle register, e for the upper register, for the various registers of the instrument, has a definite bearing on the fluency and suppleness of the lip vibrating response. Therefore, slurring and flexibility in general are directly affected. A simple test to demonstrate and prove the value of altering the level of the tongue arch is as follows. Slur from a middle concert B flat to D, a major third higher. Make certain that the level of the tongue arch is raised, that is, much like whistling the same pitches, the exact amount that the ascending slur is executed. Notice the fluency in the response of the slur while passing from one note to another. Now repeat the same slurred interval, that is, an ascending major third, but this time make a point of not altering the level of the tongue arch. Observe the increase of the mouthpiece pressure against the lips and the playing effort in general. Repeat the same test on a much longer ascending slurred interval. This time slur from the middle concert B flat to the high B flat, that is one octave. Enunciate the syllable to or do for the middle B flat and the vowel E for the high B flat. If you find that both notes speak fluently, then inject a soft W between the two syllables, to, we, or do we, to cushion the slur. Notice the fluency of response when the level of the tongue arch is used in the proper manner. Also observe that the slurred interval is practically impossible without the assistance from the tongue arch. Remember, the level of the tongue arch is an integral part of breath focus. The proper control of the two factors is of prime importance in getting over the horn. Consider this while you are working to improve your flexibility and endurance. Question number 13. What should happen to the level of the tongue arch while a note is being sustained in the lower register, the middle register, and the upper register? While the syllables ta or da are being enunciated for the lower register, the vowel ah part of the syllable must be retained to the very end of the blowing of the particular note. In other words, the level of the tongue arch, which is established a split second after the attack has been executed, must not be altered in any way until the note has been completed. In the middle register, the vowel oo part of the syllable to or do must be retained for the duration of the note. The upper register demands that the vowel e part of the syllable t or d must be sustained right through to the very end of the note. In all three cases mentioned, the point of maintaining the level of the tongue arch during the sustaining of the entire note is to assure the performer that the air column will be directed consistently and remain the same size for the duration of the note. If the level of the tongue arch is altered after the attack, then brute force, that is in the form of excessive mouthpiece pressure, has to compensate for the failing support of the tongue level to the cone-like air column. Question number 14. What causes some performers to delay or stutter their initial attacks? Many performers delay or stutter their initial attacks Number one, by not remembering to attack at the peak of the inhalation without delay. Number two, by permitting forward tongue pressure to bottle up the air. Number three, by not remembering that the backstroke of the tongue produces the attack. Number four, by the mouth corners not snapping forward during the attack as they should. Number five, by striving to make the initial attack too pointed. Number six, by neglecting to tongue a da, do, or di, rather than a ta, tu, or ti, when nervous. Number seven, by permitting the throat area to tighten and constrict by protruding the diaphragm and abdominal regions during the blowing. Number eight, by permitting the tip of the tongue to penetrate between the teeth and lips. Number nine, by using an improper embouchure formation for the particular physical type. Number 10, by using an improper jaw position. Number 11, by using too much or too little mouthpiece pressure against the lips. Number 12, by the embouchure formation being too open or too closed. Question number 15. If a series of detached notes are to be played on the same breath in the middle register, and one of the notes in the figuration jumps up a fifth or more and returns immediately, what is the correct tonguing procedure to adopt? In this instance, always tongue the upper note, with the tongue striking much higher in the mouth than usual, for the same note under other conditions. This exaggerated height for the striking position of the tongue assists in narrowing down the size of the air column, momentarily increases the amount of lip compression, and shakes off any middle register laxity in the diaphragm and abdominal regions. It is important that you practice this type of figuration so that you may experience exactly what I have related. All too many brass performers miss or flub this type of figuration. Question number 16. Is it true that some performers must actually visualize a downbeat as given by a conductor before they can execute a good clean attack? Yes, believe it or not, mental phobias and complexes have gotten so far out of hand with some performers that this weakness is not uncommon. They feel that they cannot execute a clean attack without seeing a downbeat. This is positively a mental problem. Some performers can rid themselves of this mental problem simply by realizing that it is the backstroke of the tongue which produces the attack. They should make every effort not to delay their initial attack by bottling up their air prior to the attack, and should work on the snapping forward of their mouth corners with each and every initial attack. Then too, when nervous, they should tongue a da, do, or di, rather than a ta, tu, or ti. Some choose to evade the issue by continuing to visualize a downbeat. But of course, this is no solution. Question number 17. What is generally regarded as the old-fashioned method of attack? According to the old-fashioned method of attack, the student was instructed that the tip of his tongue must penetrate between his teeth and lips as though he were spitting seeds, threads, or confetti from the tip of his tongue. Unfortunately, this disastrous, destructive, and illogical method of attacking has been handed down by instruction books and teachers for many years. Those who insist on being bound by the shackles of tradition rather than by logic and common sense still adhere to this playing fallacy. No other single playing fault is more detrimental to range, flexibility, endurance, and playing confidence than the tongue penetration habit. This evil is certainly one of the principal contributors to the all too numerous brass playing failures which are occurring today. If you attack in this old-fashioned manner, you owe it to yourself and your profession to eradicate this playing vice as soon as possible. Forget your crusade against logic and learn to tongue behind your upper teeth, upper gums, or higher, depending upon the range being played. The idea must be to tongue without molesting the embouchure formation in any way. Question number 18. What are the principal evils caused by permitting the tip of the tongue to penetrate between the teeth and lips for the attack? The principal evils caused by permitting the tip of the tongue to penetrate between the teeth and lips for the attack are based upon the fact that the mouthpiece is constantly bobbing and shifting its position during any detached tongue passages. This playing fault is caused by the performer subconsciously releasing his mouthpiece playing pressure from against his lips prior to the attack, so that the tip of his tongue is permitted to penetrate between his teeth and lips. While the tongue snaps back into the mouth to release the air column, the mouthpiece is subconsciously thrust back to its normal position and pressure against the lips. This unstable playing evil is visibly evident with many performers while they are playing detached tongue notes in their middle and lower registers. In short, every time that this type of performer executes his attack, he is actually hitting himself with the mouthpiece. Hence, his lips are subject to a tremendous beating. The bobbing, shifting mouthpiece position brings on the following playing difficulties. Number one, a loss of correct playing sensations. Number two, a loss of lip compression, if any. Number three, a loss of endurance, if any. Number four, a loss of flexibility, if any. Number five, a loss of range, if any. Number six, an overall short-windedness. Number seven, a variation of tonal timbre between slurred and tongued articulations. Number eight, a loss of necessary playing confidence. Number nine, a sluggish tongue. Number 10, an excessive mouthpiece pressure against the lips. Number 11, a faulty overall intonation. Number 12, a blatant sound on all detached tongued notes. Whenever a performer permits his tongue to penetrate between his teeth and lips, He is actually opening them to allow the tip of his tongue to penetrate between them. In so doing, he is subconsciously depending upon the timing of his reflexes to bring his lips together again for the purpose of vibrating. Some players get by in this manner for years, but as they advance in age and their reflexes slow down, the real playing difficulties commence. Learn to use your tongue without molesting the amateur formation in any way. Question number 19. How many forms of tongue penetration are prevalent in badly schooled brass performers? There are five principal forms of tongue penetration used by players in the following manner. Number one, the performer who permits the tip of his tongue to penetrate between his teeth and lips to lubricate the vibrating points of his lips with saliva. Number two, the performer who permits the tip of his tongue to penetrate between his teeth and lips so that they may be spaced properly. I have in parentheses, what space? Number three, the performer who permits the tip of his tongue to penetrate between his teeth and lips for only the initial attack. Number four, the performer who permits the tip of his tongue to penetrate between his teeth and lips for the detached tongue notes in the lower register only. Number five, the performer who permits the tip of his tongue to penetrate between his teeth and lips over his entire range. I have in parentheses, what range? You will notice that the first two penetration evils presented occur prior to the attack itself. The next three are prevalent during the attack. In any case, tongue penetration is an evil which must be eradicated. Question number 20. How may the various forms of tongue between the teeth and the lips, that is the tongue penetration habit, be eliminated? The various forms of tongue between the teeth and lips may be eliminated by the following correctional procedures. Number one, by increasing the amount of mouthpiece pressure against the lips during the execution of all initial attacks, so that the tongue is unable to penetrate between them. Number two, by using one of the D, that is the da, do, or D, forms of attack, rather than the T, that is the ta, tu, or T, a D or DEH attack is less likely to penetrate between the teeth and lips than any of the T forms. Number three, by practicing many who, no tongue attacks, the vibrating suppleness and response of the embouchure formation is so enhanced that it becomes less trying for the performer to break away from the tongue penetration vice. Number four, by practicing many legato or soft tongue exercises, the tongue is given the opportunity to adjust itself to its new behind-the-teeth position. From this point on, the player may gradually increase his various dynamic levels while tonguing and work into the various T forms of attack without permitting any form of tongue penetration. Number five, by practicing double and triple tonguing, the tongue acclimates itself to the shorter, faster stroke from behind the upper teeth or higher. The rapid forms of tonguing are much less inclined to penetrate between the teeth and lips than the slower, more marcato forms. Be careful that the tongue does not penetrate for any initial attacks, because that is the most vulnerable point. Number 6. By practicing 8 detached marcato eighth notes and a whole note on one pitch, start pianissimo, that is very softly, and make a gradual crescendo to the end of the drill. For example, if the tongue penetrates between the teeth and lips on a concert F, that is below the middle B flat, then work this type of drill on the G flat, that is a diatonic semitone higher, without permitting any form of tongue penetration. Gradually work lower in the range in this manner, never permitting the penetration habit to recur. In many cases, this correctional procedure will be found very effective. Number 7. By not permitting any tongued notes to be executed in the lower register, that is the danger zone, until the tongue penetration habit has been completely eradicated. Number 8. By not permitting the tip of the tongue to penetrate between the teeth and lips for lubrication or spacing purposes during the placement of the mouthpiece upon the lips to play. Number 9. By giving sincere, diligent, daily effort toward eliminating the tongue penetration vice, never execute even one attack without thinking until this playing weakness has completely subsided. Master this tongue penetration habit, or it will master you. Question number 21. Should the tip of the tongue ever be permitted to penetrate between the teeth and lips? While no form of tongue penetration between the teeth and lips must ever be tolerated in any form of brass playing, it is sometimes used in the pivot system for a day or two at the most in certain correctional procedures for the upstream type of player. In this case, tongue penetration is used momentarily as a means of lining up the teeth and lips. This, however, should only be prescribed by an authorized instructor of the pivot system. Otherwise, more harm than good will be the outcome. Question 22. If the mouthpiece is placed more to one side of the mouth than the other, how should the tongue be manipulated for maximum lip vibrating suppleness and response? If the mouthpiece is placed more to one side of the mouth than the other, the tongue must strike directly in line, but above, not into the lip aperture, that is the space blown open, or all attacks and tonguing will suffer from an inadequate lip vibrating response. Fuzzy, latent, labored, and cumbersome attacks are often caused by a faulty lineup of the tongue manipulation, the air column, and the embouchure formation. The tongue must always strike the back of the upper teeth, the upper gums, or higher, depending upon the register being played, and be so directed that it strikes above the lip aperture, never to one side or the other. In short, to achieve maximum lip vibrating response and suppleness, aim the forward tongue stroke and air column at the end of the instrument, keeping them in a direct line with the mouthpipe of the instrument. Question 23. How can you play a clean, crisp staccato articulation in all registers of the instrument if the tongue is not permitted to penetrate between the teeth and the lips. It is possible to play a clean, crisp staccato articulation in all registers of the instrument without tongue penetration. However, patience and perseverance are often necessary for its mastery. If a performer has permitted himself to become embroiled in the destructive tongue penetration habit, his entire embouchure vibrating suppleness and response has been made so insensitive that the cone-like air column alone does not seem to be an adequate force to vibrate his lips, especially in the lower register. The performer may greatly enhance his embouchure vibrating response and suppleness by practicing who no tongue attacks daily. After he has succeeded in achieving a dependable response from the who no tongue attack, then he should gradually work into the do that is a soft tongue attack. When this has been accomplished, he should graduate into the to attack. Great care and concentration, however, are vital to prevent the tongue penetration habit from reoccurring. Concentrate diligently until this destructive habit has been completely eradicated. Question 24. When is it correct and when is it incorrect to allow the tone to be cut or stopped by a second T forward stroke of the tongue? Most beginners on brass instruments pass through a stage in their development where almost every detached note played is cut or stopped by a second forward stroke of the tongue. This fault produces a very disagreeable, unmusical effect like tat, toot, or teet. An instructor should eradicate this playing fault at once, lest it be carried well into the performer's career. On the other hand, certain forms of modern playing demand this cutting mode of articulation for the production of certain effects. The performer, however, must not permit this to become part of his all-around playing. Some conscientious players are concerned about cutting notes with the tongue during the playing of rapid staccato passages. This actually is unnecessary because performer could not tongue twice for one note at any rapid tempo. Generally speaking, never cut or stop a note with the second T forward stroke of the tongue unless your employment demands it. If you are the possessor of this unmusical playing fault, make every effort to eliminate it. Question 25. What is the correct position for the tongue during mouthpiece placement? During the mouthpiece placement, the tip of the tongue should be resting very lightly against the lower teeth or the lower gums. In this position, the tongue does not interfere with the mouthpiece placement in any way. Observing this rule completely eliminates the possibility of using the tongue incorrectly, such as lubricating or spacing the teeth and lips during the placement. It will be recalled that these playing evils represent the first two forms of tongue penetration habit which must be avoided. The tip of the tongue must never be used as a crutch to assist in mouthpiece placement. The embouchure must be one factor, the tongue another. Never confuse the two. Question 27. What is the correct position for the tongue during the mouth corner inhalation? During the high-pitched, whispered, mouth corner inhalation, M, that is I-M, not O-M or U-M, that is not or, which is executed through both mouth corners and not the mouth center simultaneously. The tongue must recede from the teeth about 1/16 of an inch and suspend itself into space. This permits the air to pass all around the tongue, thereby making it possible, without obstruction, to inhale a tremendous amount of air if required, while keeping the mouth corner stretched to a minimum. During the recession of the tongue, make certain that the embouchure and jaw position remain unmolested. Do not press the tongue against the teeth during any inhalation, because it invites the detrimental habit of delaying the attack by bottling up the air, produces an exaggerated mouth corner stretch, and acts as an impediment to the inhalation itself. Remember, during each and every mouth corner inhalation, the tongue should always recede. Question 28. What is the correct tongue manipulation for the actual attack as prescribed by the pivot system? To execute an attack as prescribed by the pivot system, the tongue must be blown forward from its slightly receded M position so that it strikes the back of the upper teeth, the upper gums, or higher. Never permit it to penetrate between the teeth and lips. Depending upon the register being played, immediately following, without the slightest hesitation, the tongue must snap back and down in some cases into the mouth to permit the controlled cone-like air column to strike the back of the compressed embouchure formation, thereby creating the lip vibrations for the particular tone being played. Both the forward and backward strokes of the tongue for the attack must be accomplished by one continuous, uninterrupted motion. The method for attack just discussed applies to all but tongue types 4, 7, and 8 presented earlier in this chapter. This is Donald S. Reinhardt. I'm reading from my newly written book called The Encyclopedia of the Pivot System for All Brass Instruments. I will continue on the next tape number 8.